It's time for TWiT. This Week in Tech, John C. Dvorak joins Dan Gilmore and Matthew Ingram to talk about the week's story, the Oracle-Google decision, big one for the internet, the FCC open internet decision, the votes coming Wednesday, and I believe that you have been lied to about the Apple Beats acquisition. I'll explain why next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 457, recorded May 11th, 2014. Hopped up on goofballs. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting from Citrix with HD Faces, the powerful, simple way to meet with coworkers and clients anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get my special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. And use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at Gazelle.com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. And this was the week that was. We'll talk about it in a second. First, hello to John C. Dvorak.
Hello.
Who's dressing down once again. You're getting worse and worse. You look like you just woke up.
I did.
Are you wearing jammies?
I got these things. It's just a kind of a quasi-old man hipster look.
You're doing that now.
Hey.
That's a good look.
Hey, I like you kids.
John is my... I'm touching him and he's leaning away. John is my old buddy, guy who got me started in this business.
Oh, yeah.
I owe you.
Yeah, you do.
I do.
You can write a check.
I will. Also with us, Matthew Ingram, just back from Perugia and New Orleans from GigaHome. Right. What is this deal? You guys had a conference in Italy and then had a conference in New Orleans?
Actually, the one in Italy was put on by someone else. It's the International Journalism Festival.
Ah, fun.
And then we had a GigaHome editorial offsite in New Orleans.
On the way back.
On the way back.
Yeah. God, how do I get invited to the International Journalists?
Just go.
Forum.
I could put in a good word for you.
I would. Perugia is a medieval city. Isn't it the oldest university in Perugia? Medieval university? It's one of the oldest.
It's certainly pretty old. Yeah. I mean, it was the capital of the Etruscan Empire, so that's pretty old.
Well, you don't get better than that.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to welcome Dan Gilmore back to the show. I think the last time Dan was on was many moons ago. It's great to have you. Dan is... Was for a long time at the San Jose Mercury News. He left to create citizen journalism as we know it. He is a technology writer, director of the Knight Center for Digital Media Entrepreneurship at the Cronkite School of Journalism at ASU, and writes a regular column on The Guardian, which I find increasingly I turn to because you really seem to do a very good job of boiling this stuff down.
You're kind to say so. It's
no.
A lot of fun to... be back in the journalism thing.
Yeah, the journalism thing that we love so well.
I was, by the way, over in Perugia as well.
Oh, man.
So we'll both put in a word for you.
Was it wonderful?
It's an amazing conference. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a good conference, actually.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So let's talk. We could start off with the FCC. We've been talking about net neutrality now for a couple of weeks. Wednesday's the day that we will finally see whatever these proposed rules are. It was leaked to the Financial Times, apparently, who wrote a couple of weeks ago, oh, my God, the end of the world is nigh. The FCC is going to allow carriers, broadband carriers, to charge for access to their customers. In other words, to charge edge providers like me, like Netflix.
You're an edge provider?
Anybody who provides content over the internet. You're an edge provider, and you're an edge provider, and you, and you, and you. and of course, the world went, what? And there's Alexis Ohanian's raising money to put a billboard outside the FCC. Oh, I called Tom Wheeler a troll. But the truth is we haven't seen the rules, right, Dan? I mean, or do we know what the rules are going to be?
Well, we know pretty much what they're going to be. It's a proposal. It's not official rules yet, but they're in the process of doing. If it happens the way Wheeler wants, then there will in fact be a slow lane and a fast lane on the internet, and it would be pretty damaging.
What's going to happen Wednesday is the commission as a whole will see these proposed rules for the first time, vote to open a period of public comment. I think it's a total of 90 days of public comment, 60 and 30, and then vote on the rules. This is in response, and stop me anybody if I'm saying this wrong. I'm doing my best, but this is it's technical, so you have to have some technical expertise. And a lot of the commentators I've read who understand the politics of it don't understand the technology, and vice versa. So it's, you know, you got to understand the politics of it and the legal ramifications of it and the technology of it. But this is my understanding. The FCC proposed internet rules. Verizon challenged them in court and won. And the court said is you don't have a mandate from Congress under the Telecommunications Act to tell internet service providers what to do. The court said, come back. They said, we recognize open internet, a free internet is important, but you just don't have the legal authority to do this. You don't have jurisdiction. Right. Come back and try again. And there are a couple of approaches. One, the FCC can rewrite the rules under the framework proposed under Title III of the Telecommunications Act, Section 706. Or, and a lot of people are suggesting they should do this, they can use Title II. They can declare the broadband providers a common carrier, like a telco, and say, hey, you're a common carrier. Now we're in charge. FCC regulates common carriers.
I always thought we didn't want the FCC or the government involved in the internet, but now all of a sudden we do.
No, okay. I agree. This is part of the conundrum of this is certainly government regulation of the internet. Everybody agrees a bad idea.
But it's going to happen the way it's headed and the way you guys are
promoting. I don't even know
you're actually promoting it.
The government set up a situation in the United States that is pretty bad with a really strong lack of competition. They basically gave monopolies to cable companies. They created duopolies in most areas where you have two possible providers, your phone and your cable company. There's not a lot of competition. The lack of competition means you can't go anywhere if you don't like what your cable company is
doing. Right, you're stuck. And the local governments can't do much about it because of certain regulations that were put in place.
Now, we had a very good This Week in Law on Friday, and I was listening very carefully to it, and a couple of things came up. First of all, some of the panelists on the show believed that Tom Wheeler was not the devil incarnate. Who knew? Did not represent the interests of the cable companies and the wireless companies, both of which he's worked for in the past as a lobbyist. But in fact, was trying to do the best he could without going Title II. And the panel felt that the Title II rules were really draconian. Start to regulate the internet like broadband providers like common carriers, and it is a nightmare. In fact, that was AT&T's opinion. This week, AT&T said, oh, no Title II. That's going to kill the internet. Dan, maybe can you cut – have I said anything wrong at this point, and can you cut through this a little bit?
Well, I'm equally concerned about the idea of going to the common carrier rules without thinking through really carefully what that means. And it could all go wrong if they do that. However, as John pointed out himself, what we have now is effectively a duopoly or really a monopoly in the places where either Verizon has fiber or Comcast or the cable companies pretty much everywhere else, if you want to have even decent speed. And we've seen that these carriers simply are going to insist on the right to decide what bits get delivered where, at what speed, whether they get there at all. And that's just not acceptable. The common carrier notion means that they have to do their best. And you also pointed out, and this is right, that the lack of competition for what we laughingly call broadband in this country, which isn't really broadband, the lack of competition comes from the fact that the government, starting with Congress, basically gave these companies control. And here we are. What people have been predicting for more than a decade is starting to come true. And Title II is awful, but it's probably less awful than letting the cable companies run roughshod and the telecoms run roughshod. And keep in mind that with wireless, mobile, it's already over. No one's even contesting that they're going to control that stuff. So this is really close to being over.
Well, actually, why don't people complain about that more? That the wireless thing, there's no equal bits, equal packets for everybody on wireless.
Even it's Google, horrible, it's interesting. Actually. Even Google is in bed with Verizon on this one. They said, well, we understand that wireless has, and I think this is true, wireless has very different technical considerations, and wireless shouldn't have to be, at least at this point, neutral.
Well, it's not
but
going
landline
back.
Should be neutral.
Not going backwards.
I don't understand why we accept this for wireless either. They have different issues, but if it's a matter of capacity, then charge people on how much they use. But the people out at the edge of the network should be making the choices, not the people in the center.
Right.
And that inexorably we're moving toward the people in the center deciding for us.
Really, the real problem
in conjunction with their partners that are really big companies in other respects.
No, but I don't want government involvement in the internet. But I also don't trust Comcast as far as I can throw them. And all of these companies, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, their job, their mandate is to maximize profits.
I love Comcast.
They don't have.
Well, I can't use it for podcasting.
Why not?
Because we have jitter. It's weird.
Well, what a surprise.
Yeah. Well.
I mean, that's the other problem is that these companies are all in the television business. They're all, you know, Comcast not only owns
NBC.
Is NBC. It's also provides content, premium content over the wire, and they have telephony. So all of these companies are in direct competition with the free internet services.
This is all monopoly stuff.
It's a mess.
But that's the real problem to me as far as I'm concerned.
So there is a way out, but we're not going to get there with the current people in charge. The way out is to do what other countries have done in many cases, which is to say to the people who have these monopolies or at most duopolies on the pipes, say, okay, you have to lease capacity to competing ISPs at an imputed cost that's roughly what you pay now. And that doesn't fix it instantly, but that's what we have to do, or we're just not going to get there.
I loved your article.
Bust them up.
In The Guardian. The FCC is about to axe murder net neutrality. But your advice is don't get mad, get even. And you suggest, and I think I agree. I think this.
Can I guess what he says? I didn't read this.
Yeah, how would you get even?
Get off the internet now and kill your cable subscription.
No, he said.
That's getting
that's not practical.
Right. Yes, it is. That, right? There's no
I'm
reason for us.
Off right now.
No,
on.
We have no net. We give my. You just put me out of business. Thank you very much.
You're not out of business.
Without the internet.
Okay, you can find something else
I'll
to do.
I'll just sit here.
You make most of your money from the radio show anyway. That's syndicated. You make a fortune on that thing. You can still do that.
John, you are such a disturber.
I'm just saying.
You recommend, and I think this is a good solution, community internet. Movement. I think that's a really good movement. Build, if you don't like the internet, build your own. Community broadband networks owned and operated for the public. You say, waiting for Google Fiber, you might as well wait to win the lottery. Google is not your daddy or your savior.
Well, you got that right.
Yeah. And then call Congress. And see, I talked to John Perry Barlow about this a couple of years ago. He's, of course, founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and on the board. He said even among the board members of the EFF, we're divided. Some of us understand that government regulation would be a terrible thing in any regard. Others say, well, but there's no other solution at this point. Matthew Ingram, help us. Cut the Gordian knot. What do we do? It's your fault.
Wow. That's
yeah, you're Canadian.
He's Canadian. He doesn't
you
care.
Don't you can hey, say whatever you want.
Hey, Canada.
Stop it.
I do. The only sort of rational argument that I've heard for why making the cable carriers common carriers wouldn't be a good idea came from Mark Andreessen, who I had a sort of back and forth with, along with a bunch of other people on Twitter about when this first came up,
right?
And when they, you know, lost the ability to regulate, and everyone was saying, well, make them common carriers. His argument was, if we want to have the internet get faster and faster and faster and more bandwidth, so we can do, you know, virtual reality, or so we can do telepresence, and we can do all these amazing things, education and so on over the internet, then we need investment in the infrastructure. And his point was, if we make cable companies common carriers, they lose the incentive to invest or overinvest in the kind of infrastructure that we need. And now I'm not saying I believe him, but that was the sort of nub of his argument that, and he didn't really know how to prevent them from doing the things we want to prevent them from doing either. But his point was, if you just legislate that they are common carriers, they will presumably lose the incentive to invest as much as they have.
This is why it's so damn complicated. And I don't know if there's a golden or silver bullet on this. I really don't. The more I learn, the more intractable it seems, frankly.
Well, you know, if this country had common sense, which I'm afraid we don't anymore, we would look at this the way we looked at the interstate highway system in the 1950s, a public works project that is essential,
right,
that we, the taxpayers, should pay for. We should put dark fiber everywhere, essentially, as taxpayers. We should put it there and then let private industry light it up. I don't see us doing it. I think there's been a conscious decision made by the government to get in bed with the telecoms and to control our communications. And I don't there mean that, that's not a conspiracy. It's just reality.
Yeah.
I think there is a lot. Another thing that Mark and others have mentioned is that there's a lot the FCC and the government could do in terms of helping regions or towns or cities, you know, provide their own high-speed access. And some of that is freeing up unlicensed spectrum, you know, forcing carriers to give up spectrum they're not using, so that then you can, you know, those different, like, smaller areas can create their own, effectively, Google Fiber or their own ISP and provide some competition.
Great post on Level 3's blog, Observations of an Internet Middleman. This is Mark Taylor writing, and he really kind of lets you know that these big broadband providers are not looking out for our best interests. Level 3 is a kind of an internet middleman. They own backbones. They make deals with other networks to provide access to the internet. Most of these deals are peering, what we call peering relationships, mutual agreements that have gone on since the beginning of the internet, often handshake deals between engineers saying, hey, we'll direct connect to you if you'll direct connect to us. Sometimes those relationships are asymmetric. One user sends more data over the network than the others. In those cases, maybe there's payment and so forth. But he says, typically in these agreements, the way it works is everybody's responsible for fixing congestion. If all of a sudden the way people use the internet changes and there's a lot of congestion on a particular route or router, they beef it up. That's normal. So he mentions that Level 3, and by the way, these are real numbers, and that's one of the nice things about this, is that this is somebody who's right there in the middle. Level 3 has 51 peers like that. They are interconnected in 45 cities, 1,360 10 gigabit Ethernet ports. That's capacity of 13.6 thousand gigabits per second.
It's 13 terabytes.
13 terabits per second. Per second! And the average number of interconnection cities per peer is 5. So he shows a normal situation where this is a 100 gigabit port in Washington, D.C., a peer connection without congestion. That's the bottom graph here. And you see these spikes of usage, but there's no congestion. All the packets get through. In fact, the right-hand bottom right graph shows zero packet loss. Look at the top line. This is a connection with one of the 5 major broadband providers in this country. It is congested, so you see that the peaks of the graph are cut off, and you see the packet loss significant. I mean, at the point where the port is so congested that it is unusable.
And he says all six are large broadband consumer networks with a dominant or exclusive market share in their local market.
And interestingly enough, they're all dead last in customer satisfaction.
For that reason.
So you can triangulate on that one pretty quickly. You know exactly who it is.
Yeah, he doesn't name names. These are customers. These are deals he doesn't want to.
Sounds like everybody.
Weird, but, right. Basically, yeah, one is in the, I think, England, and five are in the U.S. Basically, all the big broadband providers in the U.S. are intentionally letting ports become congested because what they try, it's essentially blackmail to Level 3 and others saying, you know what,
you got to give us money. You know for a fact that this is intentional? Or they're just...
Well, they're asking, they're demanding money.
It's a heck of a coincidence.
Well.
They're coming to Level 3 saying, you need to pay us or we're going to keep those congested. They did this to Netflix.
They said you're...
Netflix internet connectivity went down on Comcast 38% since last October. And that's basically Comcast saying, you know what, you're sending a lot of traffic.
They wanted better peering Comcast or Netflix than this, so they did the deal.
Well, Netflix did the deal, but they're not happy about it. Reed Hastings has published that, you know, on the Netflix blog that he was felt he was blackmailed. And by the way, now it's Verizon and AT&T are coming to Netflix. Same thing, hat in hand, saying, if you would like for full access to our subscribers, you would be behoove you to pay us a little money.
I think this would all be solved by a fast lane.
What's a fast lane?
I don't know. That's what Gilmore said.
An HOV?
Yeah, an HOV. You need two people watching Netflix or three, depending if you're in the Bay Area, it's three. Or you can't get on and watch it. We always usually watch with two.
I feel like we should be able to cut through this and explain it, and I don't feel like we... No, Vi Hart has done a great video. Have you seen Vi Hart's video?
Who was the guys who said that we should have it more like a public utility?
That was Dan's position, and I agree.
Oh, you do? That's funny, because at least 2 years ago, I went on and on about how we should meter the internet like a public utility. And, oh, we can't meter the internet, but that's what they do with public utilities. So why don't we meter the internet?
No, my position was you can meter it, but there is plenty of bandwidth. If, in fact, we did what Dan's suggesting, which was laid fiber across this country that's owned by the government, lease it out to people, there would be true competition. The highway system would be preserved. I truly don't mind paying for more speed. That's not what we're talking about.
About
we're talking
metering. About metering.
We're talking about equal access to customers for edge providers.
What about bandwidth caps?
Yeah. Bandwidth caps effectively.
This guy in the chat room says they meter the interstate? No, they meter utilities. Water, electricity.
Well, we want to be
like
the interstate.
They don't meter the highway.
Well, they do. In some places they have toll roads.
Right. That's what we're talking about.
We don't want a toll road.
Well,
maybe we do.
I would rather go with the metering the internet. I've said this for years.
I'm not sure I really understand what you're talking about.
You pay for your bits. You buy a million bits, you pay for a million bits. You buy one bit, you pay for one bit.
That's fine, as long as all bits are equal.
It's fine with me. They would be equal, because you're paying for them.
Well,
that's not what these companies want.
So
I think if they...
Go ahead.
The risk is not for Netflix, you know. Netflix,
they can afford it.
Right. They can afford it. They have lots of money. The risk is that you have smaller content companies and smaller providers who can't afford to pay for the fast lane. Their content gets slowed down. That's a risk not just for people who want to watch TV programs. That's a risk for sort of freedom, for the free flow of information, period.
Right. By the way, 250,000 people have watched Vi Hart's video on net neutrality. I recommend, I'm not going to play the whole thing. It's on YouTube if you look for V-I-H-A-R-T and net neutrality. I think it's an analogy that is perhaps a little strange. She describes the internet service providers like delivery trucks. But I think the gist of it is as accurate.
Gasoline delivery truck. It costs money.
Yeah. Nobody's saying it doesn't cost money, John. Nobody's saying that.
Yeah.
I want Comcast to make money. I'm not saying don't make money, Comcast. I'm not a commie.
I thought you were a commie.
What?
Mark Andreessen used the truck analogy too, and said, you know, if Netflix trucks were using up 80% of the highway system.
Okay, so that's BS. And this is why Vi Hart describes this. That's BS.
No, this is one of those drawing things.
She does a good job, actually, and I highly recommend it.
It is a drawing
so,
thing. Yeah.
I hate so these drawings. You know, the other way, stop. The other thing I hate besides these drawing things is that you ever turn around and go, oh, watch this video, and it's just a bunch of words coming at you. It's like you're reading
like
in slow motion.
But this is a poor man's or woman's way of illustrating what she's talking about, and she does quite a good job. She's actually a good artist.
I've gone mad.
Do you not like drawings, John?
John doesn't like life.
No, I love life. This is crap I don't like.
This is actually, you should listen to this, very good. So her point is, look, you're already paying for delivery of these packages via this truck.
Right.
It's as if UPS said, oh, Amazon, you're sending us so much business that we want you to pay as well as the customer. The delivery is already paid for. They're double dipping, going to Amazon saying, if you would like to reach our customers, you should, because you're sending so much business to us. And Amazon should say, well, that's good, isn't it?
Wow, that's the most specious thing you've ever said.
Really? Why is that specious?
Well, for one thing, half the time you're not paying for Amazon. It's always free. And the second thing is Amazon does pay them to ship the stuff. And Amazon, if they want more.
Well, somebody pays, either me or Amazon.
If UPS wants more money, they can charge more money. And they do that commonly, charge more. The post office does it. They keep raising the rates.
That's fine. If it's equal.
Actually, John, there's a discount for volume in shipping.
No, that's true. In fact,
Amazon is.
They pay less.
The customer is paying for the shipment from Amazon. It's not Amazon paying for it. It's the customer.
Right. John's very confused.
No, I'm not confused. Amazon writes the check.
Well, they do because I pay them for Prime.
And if they rack you.
But
at the end of the day, the customer pays. I agree with you. That's true.
Yes. It's as if they said, if UPS said, both parties should pay. That's what basically Comcast wants to do. They want to Amazon and you to pay.
That's what you think.
And what they say is, because you're sending us so much business.
Well, I think, but you got to take Gilmore's point into account, which is that they actually give them a discount for all that extra business, which is the reality of it.
If there was one shipper that Amazon could use for any given community, only one was allowed to serve that community, things would be really different.
Right.
It would be a lot worse for everybody except for that shipper.
I think we all agree that if there were real competition in internet service, we wouldn't have to worry about it.
And by the way, this common carrier idea, this was going on with the phone companies for a while. And if you remember in the mid-late 90s when they had North Point Communications and all these other guys, and they were running through the AT&T switches or the Pac Bell switches, you'd lose the connection commonly because every once in a while some guy would be in the office there and say, oh, there's that, the North Point thing, let's pull it out. And they were always playing dirty. And these guys would play dirty too. So that idea is never going to fly.
Go ahead.
How did the internet get popular in the first place? It was because it was on the telephone network.
It was on a common carrier
Which was
network.
A common carrier network.
Right. Yes.
And there were a zillion competing ISPs. That's one of the reasons the internet got huge quickly in this country, because the phone company, which was then the carrier monopoly, said was not allowed to discriminate.
Right.
That's why we had internet.
There's one thing the FCC could do right now that, in fact, I think would work. They've required telcos to allow third-party DSL providers to sit on the telco networks. They never did that with cable providers. If you have Comcast in your, if Comcast built the plant, Comcast is your provider, no other company can ride that cable. If they said,
that's
as
why
they
I use
did with
Sonic.
DSL.
Sonic.net, your buddy.
Yeah, if they did with DSL, SonicNet can ride on AT&T's wires into my house. If they did that with cable and said, hey, SonicNet, would you like to be an ISP on top of Comcast cable? They could do that right now. They did it with DSL. That would change things. That would provide competition.
Is that what you recommend?
Yes.
Okay, we're done.
Dr. Laporte writes his prescription. Amazon, Microsoft, and others have agreed. Google, Amazon, eBay, Facebook, Netflix, Twitter, and Yahoo have all agreed. They've written a letter to the FCC saying, you guys, you cannot let net neutrality die. They don't, unfortunately, tell the FCC what to do. Just what
I
not
think
to
you
do.
Solved it. We should just create that common carrier on the cable and see what happens.
You think that would provide competition?
It would do something.
I love the idea, and I just don't think that local communities have the cojones and to it. I would love the idea of local municipalities to say, hey, we're going to create a broadband infrastructure. We will let third-party companies provide the service on top of it. This is Bob Frankston's idea, by the way, of VisiCalc fame.
And local governments are too stupid.
In about 20 states, they're forbidden by the state legislature, which has been paid off by the telecoms actually do that.
That started in Philadelphia with municipal Wi-Fi. And, of course, Philadelphia's Comcast's backyard, and they immediately went to the state legislature and said, what are they doing? They're competing with us. You know, and I can't understand a private business saying the government shouldn't be allowed to compete with us. So maybe that is a reasonable thing.
Campaign contributions are an amazing thing.
Very powerful.
Just amazing.
May1.us, support Larry Lessig's citizen-funded, crowdsourced super PAC to end all super PACs. You probably hate this idea, too.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, John, what do you like?
I like a lot of stuff.
Well, let's find out right after this word from GoToMeeting.
There you go.
We're going to take a little break. We'll come back with more. Great panel. Dan Gilmore is here, the original citizen journalist from the Cronkite School of Journalism, The Guardian, and elsewhere. John C. Dvorak, ChannelDvorak.com, and NoAgendaShow.com. ChannelDvorak.org. And
channeldvorak.com.
You got .com?
It's dvorak.org and noagendashow.com. And I have dvorak.com, too, but I just prefer using the org since
because you're nonprofit.
I'm not making any money.
He's a 501(c).
I'm not.
But
I pay all my taxes straight up.
On everything he makes, every dollar. And Matthew Ingram from GigaOhm. Great to have you. You're not in Canada, or are you?
I am.
Wow. So you really are an unaffiliated combatant.
What Canada part?
I am in Toronto.
What language?
Oh, Toronto.
Speak? Oh, okay.
Oh, Toronto, yes.
Oh, Toronto.
Great place.
And we do have our own problems with competition, so.
Great. Michael Geist actually has a
Toronto.
Oh, I love Toronto. Michael Geist actually has a very good article. He is the Larry Lessig of Canada. Mm-hmm. He talks a little bit about, he's got an article called Different Regulations, Different Regulators Behind Canada's Net Neutrality Advantage. This is on his blog at michaelgeist.ca.
Shaw Cable rocks. No.
No. You know, I think there are issues. I know Rogers for a while was knocking Skype off. I think they fixed that. We don't have any problems with our Canadian contributors anymore.
Yeah, it has gotten better.
Yeah.
Noticed.
But it used to be, I couldn't talk to Amber for more than an hour. It would drop out. Yeah. That seems to be fixed. Is that the CRTC or just Canadians want to be nice?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, Rogers, it's a bit black box. You know, you can't tell why they do what they do, why things get better, why they get worse.
Yeah. I think in some ways what Tom Wheeler, to give him a little credit, is trying to do is similar to what the Canadian CRTC has done, which is try to provide transparency. Wheeler said, no, if an internet service provider is doing this kind of thing, they may be allowed to, but if they're doing it, they have to tell you.
And that is better than no transparency.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to rank them, it is better to have all those deals publicly available so you can see so-and-so paid this much to get, to whoever. And then at least you have some ammunition to say it's unfair or to whatever, to argue.
Well,
it's not even clear they have the authority to do that.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is the Telecommunications Act of 1996 has really cut these guys off at the legs. And that's the real truth of the matter. Our show today brought to you by one of the great services that has sprung up on this internet of ours is free and open internet. And it's from Citrix. It's called GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting helps all of those teams, like us, that are distributed all over the world. Meeting, people I know don't like meetings, but meetings are often the only way to cut through the, confusion, to get brainstorming, to getting everybody in the same room is really almost vital in business. I would say it is vital, collaborating and so forth. And with teams distributed all over the world, I tell you, GoToMeeting is awesome. GoToMeeting's pricing is awesome, too. Their flat rate pricing means, and I know a lot of teams do this, you fire up GoToMeeting in the morning and leave it running all day, and you can keep in collaboration. You can share screens. You can even see each other face-to-face with crystal-clear HD video conferencing. GoToMeeting has really transformed what it means to collaborate around the world. I just think it's a great solution. It'll save you time, it'll save you money, and it'll let you work smarter. try GoToMeeting today for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the big orange Try It Free button and use the promo code TWIT, and you will see why GoToMeeting is the choice for online meetings. Try it free for 30 days. Go to meeting. All right, I think I'm going to go out on a limb here. Apple buying Beats. This was the story that came out late last week. $3.2 billion. I'm not sure who had the story first. I can't remember. Was it the Financial Times? Was it? Anyway, still no confirmation. I think it's a bogus rumor. I don't believe it.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought Dr. Really? Dre confirmed it.
So Dr. Dre posted something on his Facebook that apparently was a phone call, and he said, I'm rap's first billionaire, which he would be with a 25% stake in Beats. Added to his existing fortune, he'd be well over $1 billion. Then he pulled it down. Now, I got to tell you, Beats business is almost entirely driven by marketing.
It's a fad.
The headphones are crap.
Oh, yeah.
The streaming music service has been a flop, despite the fact that AT&T has offered a family plan for it and aggressively marketed it. It is a marketing-driven business. It has been from day one. It's the name of Dr. Dre, the name of Jimmy Iovine, the music industry cachet, the design, the styling, and frankly, the huge advertising budget.
By the way,
they're not good.
No, they're terrible headphones. You don't have any. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I want to point out something the chat room pointed out. Dr. Dre's not a real doctor. I just want to.
What? He's not. Yeah. Another lie. Yeah. He's a doctor of musicology. He actually is a very important and successful producer in the music world. He's discovered a great many acts.
Yeah, no, he's famous.
Including M&M, Mr. Snoop Dogg.
You've heard Mr. of him? Snoop Dogg?
Have you heard of him?
Is that spelled D-O-G, D-O-G-G, or D-A-W-G?
Go ahead.
It's Snoop Lion now.
Now it's Lion, because he's, he's a Lion of Judah.
So you think this is bull crap?
I am the only person in the world, apparently, who thinks this is bull crap. I cannot think of any reason why Apple should buy this company. Admittedly, they have a cash flow of $1 billion a year, so a $3.2 billion acquisition is not an expensive acquisition.
Well, you have 3x sales is pretty high.
But you also got to wonder why they're for sale. And I have a feeling that the streaming music service has been a flop.
Well, and that's the only reason to buy them.
Apple can make these deals. Apple has these deals. And there's no guarantee that Beats deals would survive a sale to Apple. The music industry...
They wouldn't. They likely wouldn't.
Yeah. So what are they buying?
Well, that's an interesting theory.
I think you're probably... I'm hoping you're right, because if they are buying them, I think it's a bad thing. Like, I think it's a bad sign for Apple.
Well, it's a sign they've lost their way, I think.
Right.
You don't know this.
Well, I like to say it.
Okay. They may have a grand scheme behind it all. They have yet to screw up Major League.
Oh, no. Apple screwed up.
I disagree.
They've screwed up
Major League. Well, what's your name one?
Ping.
iCloud.
iCloud. There's plenty of Apple screw-ups in the world. They've yet to create a music service, streaming music service that's any good, that's successful. iTunes Radio does not work.
iTunes makes me want to punch myself in the face.
iTunes is horrible itself.
I agree. It's
Apple.
Horrible.
Two words. I know you're going to defend it. Apple Maps. I know you love it.
I didn't say I love it. I don't use an iPhone, but I do know that when I did a showdown with a bunch of people using different map systems, the Apple guy won.
I got lost.
You got lost with Apple Maps?
I was in the showdown. I got lost with Google Maps. You're trying to find a falafel place. I went to the wrong falafel place.
Yeah, that's because you were using Google Maps.
Right.
Yeah, the Apple guy was nailed.
John's scientific
it worked.
Study.
It was science. A study, and you got lost.
Science!
There you go.
So you're right. Either this is like Apple's like, what the hell? You lost your way, Apple. Tim Cook has clearly got no new ideas. Or it's a false rumor. I prefer to think it's a false rumor.
I have to say, though, maybe this is not a good deal or the right deal, but I cannot for the life of me understand why a company like Apple that is so good at so many things, particularly hardware, that makes people go insane and want to pay vast sums of money for their hardware and computers. Their cloud services are the worst. Like, they might as well have been invented by the Soviet Union in the 50s. Like, they are so, except they're better looking. But they are so painful to use and so awkward, and they do such incredibly terrible things. It's like, I don't know. I don't understand. Like, couldn't they spend some of their $160 million to hire some people who could figure this stuff out? Like, it's just mind-boggling.
We should point out that, you know, Cupertino to journalists is the Kremlin. So,
and you say that as somebody who sits in Red Square all day looking up at the at the towers of St. Peter's or St. Basil's. So this is the funniest part of this. Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre would apparently become Apple executives.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Dre part-time.
He's got his tackle practice.
Well, what?
I'd love to see those meetings.
For about a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, for about a month.
I can't see Johnny Ive looking at Beats and saying, those headphones are the greatest headphones we've never designed. It's not invented here. They're not great headphones. I mean, nobody who likes audio says they're great headphones. They're highly enhanced bass, which is great for rap, but nobody thinks they're quality headphones.
No.
The kids like them because they got Dr. Dre. It's all about marketing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
$3.2 billion is coincidentally exactly what Google paid for Nest, a thermostat company. So $3.2 billion is the new $1
million. I guess. That's weird.
The other thing I'd point out is that most of Apple's $160 billion is overseas, is offshore. And to spend it, there would be a significant tax consequence.
They have to deal with that money, and they're using that.
So if Beats were a European company, I'd say, well, that makes sense, that, you know, because they've got all this cash offshore and they can't repatriate. But I don't. It's an American company, right?
Well, we don't know.
Where they carefully put offshore. So
well,
have
it could be offshore.
Using the Dutch reach around.
Could be in. That's different. It could be in Bermuda for all. I mean, I don't know. We didn't look into that.
Well, let me see.
Because nobody came up with that. This
where
is a scam and a lie, like you did. This is the first
located.
Time I've heard this idea.
The Dutch reach around? Did you just say?
Yeah, don't.
It's not the name.
Don't ask him for any more details.
All right.
Beats by Dre, formally established in 2008 as the brainchild of legendary artist and producer Dr. Dre and the chairman of Interscope Geffen A&M Records, Jimmy Iovine. That, right there.
I think that's offshore. I think Geffen and that whole operation is offshore, and I think that's where they set this
up. It's not offshore.
It's got to be.
It's only now.
I think you stumbled onto it. This is exactly what's going on.
You mean
the way to
right here where it
money.
Says Beats Electronics is based in Santa Monica, California?
But it doesn't mean they're incorporated there.
That's true.
Beats is partially owned. There's a stake in Beats from Hewlett-Packard. 25% of Beats is owned by a financial holding firm.
And where are they located?
That bought their stake from HTC. Remember, HTC attempted to use the glitter of Beats to sell smartphones.
Poor HTC.
Yeah, that was a mistake. You know, it's actually what's really poor HTC. If they just held on to this deal, that quarter would have saved HTC.
Yeah, it would have been seven because they were tripled.
That $800 million.
Right, the valuation
it would have been
tripled.
Whoa, that's a good deal. We can run for another 3 years
that. It's just out of luck.
I don't really understand. Like, if Apple was going to do something like this, why wouldn't they just buy Spotify or somebody like that?
I mean, Beats
streaming.
Service people actually like.
The thing that Beats streaming did, they bought Moog, which was a nice service that was struggling. But they came too late because there's Google Music, there's Spotify, there's RDO. Everybody's chosen. And I know this because the deal AT&T was offering, $16 for a family, was much better than the Spotify deal or the Google Music deal. So I went to my kids, 18 and 22, and I said, hey, kids, let's all use Beats.
Okay, Dad.
No.
Oh, no.
They said, "What? No, I like Spotify. No, yeah. I like RDO. No,
yeah.
I mean, we're all using.
Maybe they're too old.
Oh, yeah, if there were four, I could convince them.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, apparently, according to one story I read, 200,000 subscribers. It's not a significant number. Not worth billions. I'm going to be the New York Times is confirming this. The Wall Street Journal is confirming this. It came from the Financial Times. I'm going to be the guy that stands up and says, I call BS.
This would be a good call. Just as a long shot, I think you're doing the right thing.
But no one will remember if you're wrong anyway, so don't worry about it.
That's true.
That's the key.
John understands this whole
thing, I know that
this
game.
Whole dynamic. Well. Say something outrageous. If you're right, people will go, whoa, he knew it. He was the only one.
It works.
And if you're wrong, it's like, well, just another. I'm the guy, by the way, said 2 weeks ago, short apple.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
That was a good call.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I'm the guy when Apple said, we're going Intel, said, what are you, nuts? So don't listen to me. So Matthew, you agree with me, though.
I like
this. This is a kind of a bad bellwether for Apple, I think.
I do, because as soon as I heard about it, even though I've never used Beats headphones, I've never, you know, I haven't used the service, it made me, it troubled me that they would pay that much for this thing. That says to me, we're out of ideas.
It would be the largest acquisition in Apple's history by several orders.
I remember the good old days when the biggest acquisition Microsoft ever made was the $600 million one of whatever it was called.
Web TV.
And, they were putting themselves in kind of an awkward position. And then it went up. And then went up, and now they're just throwing money away.
So I have to correct myself. The Dutch reach around, you're right, is something else. What Apple used is a strategy known as the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich.
That's worse.
That's a thing?
I think that's a thing.
I think that's just another word for the dirty Sanchez.
We're going down a nasty road here.
I think we just brought Urban Dictionary down. But what you do with a double Irish with a Dutch sandwich is you route profits through Irish and Dutch subsidiaries and then off to the Caribbean, and it's exactly what Apple's been doing for some time now. The problem with doing that is they now have a huge cash stake
overseas,
but they can't use it.
Well, here's a kind of a question. The Supreme Court has been bringing this up, that the corporations are people. And if you're a person, an individual, and you try to move your money and hide it offshore, the IRS goes after you. Why don't they just go after this money?
I agree with you, but it is legal. That's basically the story.
So far.
Anyway, I think that's enough on Beats. If the deal goes through, it will go through early next week. Let's make a recording of this show.
Aren't you doing that anyway?
I'm one step ahead of you.
I hear that you do that regularly.
I think you're doing that.
And then we can play it back next Sunday. Leo was right. It was a rumor created by Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine in an attempt to sell headphones and stock or whatever and to gin up some interest in a company that is actually failing. That's what I think.
Now you've gone out. You actually took a good...
Went too far?
Yeah, way too far. You don't want to... When you bring up a crackpot idea like this, you don't want to extrapolate to make it worse.
Right. Yeah, just kind of vague outline. Vague outline.
Vague it out.
If you missed, one thing we did do, which was amazing, we recorded last week's shows, and if you missed any of them, we've got this little synopsis. We call it a house ad.
Previously on Twit, triangulation.
Because of YouTube, because of self-publishing and free media and the web, like, you can be a band that's making a living. You can be a small, sustainable business version of a musician, which never used to exist.
Tech news today.
Apple is in talks to buy headphone maker Beats Electronics for $3.2 billion.
This feels not so much like a typical Apple purchase, which is, you know, buy all sorts of cool technology that we don't have. It feels more like a Microsoft purchase, which is we missed something in the market and we're trying to buy our way back in.
This Week in Google.
Well, there are people who literally believe in a meta tag called the Google Pre. Meta tag.
Google Pray. Google, please rate me high by keyword UMAX search. is that the weirdest thing that you've ever seen?
No, not even close.
Know-how. Quick question. I created a few videos that I want to turn into animated GIFs. And believe it or not, every version of Premiere has a tool built into it that will let you make animated GIFs.
Twit. Technology isn't always pretty, but we are.
They were great. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Holy cow.
That was last week. That was so much fun.
I can't believe that the father says the word GIF, knowing full well that the inventor of the format calls it GIF.
It doesn't matter what the inventor calls it.
I can't believe Adobe Premiere has a built-in animated GIF tool. That seems like a total waste of space.
So you're using the word that way now, too. You've turned on me.
It's always
been GIF.
You get
to decide.
No, it's not.
Wait a minute, John. Wait a minute. If we only had recorded our old radio show, I bet you anything you said GIF back then.
I've never said GIF.
You always said GIF?
Yes.
That's a peanut butter.
No, that's Jiffy.
I mean, seriously, you think it's GIF?
That's what
the graphics interchange format. Graphics interchange.
It's pronounced GIF.
The graphics?
Okay, okay.
The graphics interchange format?
Well, you want me to come up with every word in the world that doesn't match this sort of model that you just created in front of me right now?
This is one of the most stupid and yet most hotly debated items in technology is how to pronounce that word.
So why is my name not pronounced Gilmore?
Yes. I rest
What's
my
it
case.
Got to do with anything?
Nothing.
Frankly, I don't see why the guy who created the format, crap format that it is, should have any say.
It's lossless. It's kind of cool.
He doesn't have any say in it.
Jeff
he created
not
it.
Oh, I guess it is we lossless. Get,
totally lossless.
Yeah, that's why I got, that's why
to
I got
say
sued.
How to say it.
He does or not?
No, we do.
We do.
You create something.
Not even we.
It.
I do.
People can call it whatever they want.
Because I am on the radio and have been since 1976.
Oh, really?
I am the one who pronounces most of these words out loud for the first
45
time.
45 years.
Yeah, since I was a kid.
When I was in Italy, everyone called it Giga-Ohm. Giga-Ohm.
Matthew Ingram from Giga-Ohm.
Giga-Ohm.
And I like that.
I kind of got used to it.
Giga-Ohm.
In England, where it's Beta.
That's French, though. It should be Giga-Ohm. Hey, Giga-Ohm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, anyway, G-I-Z,
okay, I'm sorry I brought it up.
If it's in Italy, you have to wave your hands as you
Giga-Ohm.
Say it.
Giga-Ohm.
Wow. It's actually, so easy to get off the track
there
here.
There are
the show.
Apple hoaxes. Remember all of the Apple journalists who reported that Apple was going to make biometric earbuds?
I never said that.
Yeah.
It was a hoax. Some guy posted it on Secret.
Oh, so you're going to stick with this thesis of yours instead of moving on to the next topic.
I'm just saying, the Apple press is, there's so little, I know because we do an Apple podcast. Every week we do an Apple podcast, and there is no Apple news. Because Apple says nothing.
Why do you do the podcast if there's zero Apple news?
Well, there
news?
Used to be, but Apple has just kind of, it's there's nothing going on. And so you have to, you got to report rumors.
Well, and Secret is the new, like Secret is the new place to go for hot rumors, most of which are not
true. Are wrong. Although occasionally there is a good rumor from Secret. Do you look at Secret?
Secret's the new Twitter then.
Yeah, yeah. Very much so. It's the new Twitter with sex.
It's anonymous.
Apparently, almost all my friends are having group sex.
Really?
Seems to be.
Have they invited you?
No. I read about it on Secret.
I didn't need to know that.
Isn't that? Well, it's probably just as phony as the other stuff. Good news, there is going to be an Android Secret soon.
What is it?
You're doing this to me on purpose. I know you are,
John. No.
I don't understand why, though.
I got up at 6:30 in the morning because of barking dogs.
Really? I know how that is. Mm. Yeah. Let's see. Okay. I'm trying to separate the Oracle Google story from the FCC story because it's another thicket.
Mm-hmm. I think we should move to that story.
All right. Well, let's take a break. Then we'll do the thicket. Because I think this probably is, I've buried the lead, probably the most important story of the week is this court case. Court ruling in Oracle's favor, and that could be very bad news for a whole lot of stuff. We'll talk about that in a second. First,
wow.
Good news if you mail things. You mail things?
Yes, I believe in the post office.
Yeah, we want to support the post office. Do you mail a lot of things? Like, do you, like, fulfill stuff? Like, do you have a vinegar store online where you sell people vinegar and stuff?
The vinegar's coming.
You should. I would buy Dvorak vinegar.
You know, it's the way
you
I
call
make,
it piss and vinegar?
When I
John C. Dvorak's piss and vinegar?
Well, people would think there's piss in it.
There's not much piss in it.
There's not much vinegar. If you make vinegar right the right way at home, you'd really the production is not what you'd hope.
That's the problem.
You make a few gallons a year, and that's about it.
Yeah. That's not gonna be a home business for
no.
you. Well, if you had something that you mailed, you know, fulfillment is a very fine art. And gosh, I am surprised often how many packages I get with people are sticking on stamps. I got a package from a company that wants to promote these. They got these little bungee cords for wiring, and they sent me those things.
Yeah.
And they stuck me, and they put 6 stamps on it, and they didn't put enough. It was 85 cents postage due. So what a lousy impression, right? Don't, you should not have this kind of lousy impression. You should, if you're in a business that requires mailing, whether it's invoices or brochures or products, maybe you're an Etsy seller. I can't believe the number of Etsy sellers. It looks like the package was handmade. They should look professional. That's why you need Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you print your own official U.S. postage from your computer and your printer, eBay, Etsy, Amazon, wherever you sell. It has, you get a scale. We're going to tell you how they get the scale. So you always have exactly the right postage. You're not guessing. You're not applying it with your thumb and your tongue. You actually can print right on the envelope with your company logo. The return address is very professional. It really is a great way to do any kind of mailing. The mail carrier comes to you and picks it up. In fact, there's even a big button on the Stamps.com interface that says, get the mail carrier here. So if you miss the pickup, you can get another one free. Plus, you get special discounts on mailing and shipping you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com, last year, take a guess how much postage, I'm going to hide the number, how much postage Stamps.com customers printed last year? Just take a wild guess.
A lot.
A lot. Very good. That's exactly right. It's $1.5 billion.
Wow.
Worth of postage in one year.
What piece of the action do they get? What's their profits?
Probably, you know, I don't know, but I would guess, a tenth of that? $150 million? Probably.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's a good deal anyway for you, and I want you to try it right now. We've got a special offer, a no-risk trial. Here's what you do. You go to stamps.com. You might be tempted by the $80 bonus value and all that stuff. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage. Enter the offer code TWIT, and you're going to get a $110 offer. Now, that includes the USB scale I mentioned.
Look, there's a picture of you.
I know. Who would have thunk?
Uh-huh.
How did that happen?
Your face. You're thinner. You're more vital.
I'm happier because I'm using stamps.com.
Oh, okay.
I had that USB scale. I plugged that right in. I always knew the exact postage. You get the scale. You get a $55 worth of free postage you can use over the first few months of your account.
Mm.
You get an activity scale. And you get a month of stamps.com. That's a good deal. Now, you will pay shipping. I want to be absolutely upfront. I think there's like $5 shipping and handling on the postage meter. I mean, you know, not the meter. It's not a postage meter, the USB scale. But you get to keep the scale even if you cancel. So that's, and you get a lot of other stuff too. It's a good deal. Stamps.com. We use it here.
Can you use the scale for weighing food?
Anything you want.
Huh.
Anything you want. I weigh when I bake. I do not use
baking. You got to be really careful.
Grams. I go by grams.
That's the way you should do it for baking.
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter's a baker. I don't like baking.
Otherwise, they say sift.
No,
I just want to weigh it.
Weighing's good.
Yeah.
Most American recipes, though, are designed for volumetric.
I know. They never tell you. I know.
So Europeans are into weighing.
So, all right. Let me see if I can explain what happened here. Google, when it started shipping Android phones, actually, Google acquired Android. It was a company. Andy Rubin started the company, then Google bought it. When Android was created, it was based on Java.
Right.
But they did not have an official Oracle Java runtime on it. They had their own. It was called Dalvik, D-A-L-V-I-K. And it was, correct me if I'm wrong here, reverse engineered to be compatible with Java, but it wasn't the Java written by Oracle, which owns the rights to Java. So Java was invented by Sun in the mid-90s
and bought out.
It was written as a write-once, run-anywhere application programming language. A lot of people use it. So Dalvik is open source. It was written by Dan Bornstein, who named it after an Icelandic fishing village. I thought you might be interested in that little tidbit. And it is API compatible with Oracle's Java. Oracle sued Google, saying you stole our APIs. Lower court said, no, you can't steal APIs. That's just, the names of calls. You can't steal that. Oracle appealed the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit.
What district?
That's a good question. I don't know what district.
It's the one in Washington that does patent cases.
It was a D.C. patent case. Overturned the lower court ruling saying that APIs are subject to copyright. Now, this is a huge deal because while software is subject to both patent and copyright, the idea of the name you give a call or the name you give a variable – being copyrightable is really tough. The jury had previously deadlocked on this, whether Google's use of Java APIs was covered by fair use. And that basically is the contention. Oracle sued Google for patent infringement and copyright violation.
Interesting.
The jury said no patent infringement, but Google did copy the code from 37 APIs. Google said computer code, like concepts in a written language, are subject to fair use in terms of structure, sequence, and organization. You can't copy verbatim the words.
Which they did.
Well, that's what's interesting on this. They did say Google had copied this code, 9 lines of code.
Well,
the judge at the time said, well, any idiot could write a range check. In fact, I decided to learn programming language, and I wrote one. Which I kind of admire the judge for that.
This judge compared the descriptions or the calls in the API to Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, which seemed kind of, I mean, I'm not sure we're at the point where we want to say that computer calls in an API are literature.
Right.
But that seems to be where she was going.
Interest. Yeah, right.
Well, I think people have been, in the past have said that computer code is somewhat like, say, literature or music, that it is a creative act of that kind.
Art.
But an API
calls is not the art part.
Well, and that's what the EFF said. They say treating APIs as copyrightable has a profound negative impact on interoperability and therefore on innovation. All software developers use APIs to make their software work with other software.
It'd be more like the phone book. I mean, it's a mechanical sort of, right? It's not a unique expression.
Well, it's like saying alphabet. It's like saying, well, you could own an alphabetic sorting of names.
Mm-hmm.
I really have no opinion on this story.
Allowing a party to assert control over APIs means, this is the EFF still, means that a party can determine who can make compatible, therefore interoperable software. For instance, there's an emulator on Linux called Wine that allows you to run some Windows software on Linux. The way it does it is not by duplicating the Windows code, but merely by duplicating the API. So when a program says, open a window, draw a window, put a line there, it does it in the same way, with the same calls that it would if it were on Windows. The code that runs may be different, but it responds in the same way. So an API means that you can create an emulator. This would allow this ruling would allow Microsoft to say, hey, by the way, you cannot ever create a Wine. Wine's dead.
Yeah. I mean, the potential implications are horrendous.
Well, we use APIs all the time. If you write software, for instance, to get mail from a mail server, you're doing it by calling publicly published API calls.
Yeah, but the guys that you're talking to are not objecting to
it. No, they want it to happen. But it would now all of a sudden give them control. You could write, for instance, a mail server that only works with clients you approve.
You could.
I think it'd be a big change in the way we do things.
So this court is the one that has done patents for years and has basically, this court is in love with anything that has intellectual property attached.
Right.
And they're getting increasingly slapped down by the Supreme Court because they've been going vastly overboard, the appeals court, in favor of patent holders. So, you know, maybe this will get slapped down by the Supreme Court, but it's pretty bad. And the other thing I'd be really curious about is I think it's inevitable that Oracle has done its share of what it has sued Google about.
That's a good point.
And I'd kind of like to see a list of the APIs that Oracle, by its standard, has been stealing over the years. I bet there are quite a few.
Of course, Google says it will appeal. The first thing it'll do is go back to the lower court and see if they can rewrite it and get the lower court to higher court to approve it. But ultimately, I think you're right. I think this is going to the Supreme Court. And there is hope there. Although, frankly, with the Supreme Court we have, I feel like it's unpredictable. You never know what they're going to do. But Dan, you say that this is the kind of thing they might well overturn.
Well, you know, it's another case of Congress not doing its job,
right.
So we have to wait for the Supreme Court to do Congress's job.
In this particular instance, since it's a highly technical issue, I don't see the Supreme Court even being able to figure out this. I don't care who explains it to them.
Well, it's easy. Let me explain. And I'll read. This is from the judgment. To use the district court's example, one of the Java API packages at issue is java.lang. Within that package is a class called math. Within math, there are several methods, including one that's designed to find the larger of two numbers. We'll call it max. The declaration for the max method is defined for integers is public static int max parenthesis int x int y, where the word public, very important, means that the method is generally accessible, that they're publishing it, in effect. Static means that no specific instance of the class is needed to call the method. The first int indicates that the method returns an integer. Int x, x, y are two numbers inputs being compared. Now, I think any literate person could understand what
I'm saying. They'll all figure that out. No problem.
The programmer calls the max method by typing the name of the method, max, and providing x and y.
Ah.
The expressions used command the computer to execute the implementing code that carries out the operation of returning the larger number.
Yeah, they'll have that down.
Right.
Yeah. I like to hear the questions they have about this.
So the issue is,
what if it's y?
Right. Does Oracle own the words max, x, and y? Because they say they do.
I think Scalia would have something to say about this.
Yeah, when is Wapner on, maybe? I don't know.
Wapner. There's a callback for you. Wapner.
Time for Wapner.
15 years ago.
But you got it.
I know all these references.
Time for Wapner. Google believed, what a shock, that Java programmers would want to find the same 37 sets of functionalities in the new Android system, callable by the same names, Max as example, as using the Java. That seems reasonable. That's why we have an API.
There you go.
Oh, well, I don't, you know.
Well, this story went nowhere,
Leo. Unfortunately, I don't want to say the sky is falling, but I think the sky is falling.
Well, it's not a good thing, let's put it that way. But there's nothing to discuss.
There's nothing to discuss because there will be appealed, and of course it's not, so it's not final. So the sky is not falling. Well, it could.
It could fall.
It could always fall.
In the near future, the sky could fall. Google's trying to sell Google Glass at a golf tournament.
There's something funny about that.
There's something odd about it.
Look out. What?
What? it's at the Players Championship. Google has a booth. There's somebody right there in the booth selling.
Yeah, now Chad's got has to be locked on for way too long.
What?
He
loves you. He doesn't want to cut away from you.
He hates me.
Is this because country club golfers are the only people who can afford it?
I think when you're selling a $1,500 gadget that doesn't really do much, you probably should go to the golf
tournaments. Probably more entertaining than the golf game itself.
Google has said, our hope is to bring Glass to new explorers like optometrists, sports lovers, online retailers, cooks, and travelers. So we're going to, you know, go to places and try to sell this stuff. I had the opportunity to buy Glass. I did not. I did buy it, technically. But I gave it to Jason Howell.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm glad I did, because Jason Howell's a daughter, Savannah, he had just had a baby. What are you taking a picture of? What is that?
I'm just showing off the thing. Yeah. I was watching John C. Dvorak instead.
He is a really attractive man, isn't he? I think flannel suits you, my friend.
I'm all for the flannel.
Are you thinking like of joining a grunge band?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I'm trying to find real quickly, cuz what Jason did was so made me happy that I did buy the Glass and give it to Jason. His daughter Savannah took her first steps and Jason got it on video via Glass, a video he probably would not have had if he hadn't had Glass on.
So he just wears these 24/7?
All the time.
Oh, okay.
And all you have to do is go, Glass, take a movie, and...
Yeah,
you know, that's a great example. I remember when my kids were little, and they would start doing something cute, and you'd run to get the video camera.
It's over.
Which in my day weighed 45 pounds, and so you had to drag the whole bag and the battery and everything.
Right.
And by the time you get there, they finished doing whatever was cute.
Right.
This is a good quality video, too.
And he'll have this forever. And I remember Henry's first steps. I remember Abby's first steps. I don't have a record of it in any way.
Yeah.
This is awesome. So
it is pretty.
I'm a little skeptical of glass in general, but this is one case where
You're recommending with newborns.
That's actually why I gave it to him. I said, you know what? You have a newborn baby. You really should have glass.
I could see, you know, the golf thing, to get back to that news story. I could see if you went to a really high-end golf course, what if they just gave you glass
just for the 9 holes or the 18 holes. I think that's a great idea. Yeah,
and then maybe there's an app built in that you know, tells you how far away you are from the hole or something, you get to keep the video.
Still not gonna make it into the hole.
Chad's in love with that shot of the glass. That's the fourth time you've shown.
He loves that shot. I'm telling you, Chad's on something.
Chad, do you need to get out?
Get some fresh air, Chad. I'm sorry. We love Chad. Without Chad Johnson, the show would be nothing. He is great. According to Next Web, Google is testing.
There he goes again with that shot. Just a boom, boom.
He likes to do that to you, John. He likes to catch you. He's hoping he'll catch you with your finger up your nose.
I don't do that.
He's hopped up on goofballs. It's okay.
That's pretty obvious.
I don't even know what that means. What's a goofball?
A goofball is a combination, I believe, of heroin and meth.
No, that's a speedball.
That's a speedball.
Oh, a goofball. Okay, maybe it's heroin and something, maybe like, you know, some downer. I don't know. What are you asking me for? You can go to the Urban Dictionary and look it up.
Again with the Urban Dictionary.
I'll go look it up.
Apparently, Google is testing a new Gmail interface that is a very simplified interface. Focus on mail. They've renamed Stars to Pigeon. I have been struggling with Google Mail now for some time. If you use Gmail in the web interface, it's great. But it is a broken implementation of IMAP, and I've been trying like the Dickens to get a Macintosh email client, including Apple's own Mail, to work with Gmail.
Have you tried Mailbox?
Yeah, like Mailbox. Doesn't have some of the things I need. I've been using something called MailMate, which is written by a Danish programmer, and it's really good. But he said, you know, the problem with IMAP on Google is just really weirdly implemented. It's not standard at all.
Does Thunderbird work with it?
All these things work okay, but there are issues. And Apple's mail only started breaking with Mavericks, but it's just not – it just adds to my general pain, my frustration with email.
I thought Mailbox was working really well.
Okay.
And I was doing really well, and then I found out that it was auto-archiving important emails from people, and so that was awkward.
It's just very odd.
So the goofball, there's no real combination of drugs. It's just something that people say.
Yeah. I think it's a Letterman thing.
Well, it's in the Urban Dictionary, but it's just...
Anybody using the hashtag Amazon cart?
No. Who would use this?
I signed up for it.
Oh, what do you get out of it?
Squat.
What is this thing with Google and they get squat?
Squat.
You can buy stuff quickly.
What's this? Google's got some new shopping thing with same day delivery.
Yeah, they're just.
What is this all about?
They're trying to eat Amazon's lunch. Well, okay, I will in a moment. But first, Amazon cart.
Okay.
If you find a tweet with an Amazon product link in it.
Oh, this deal.
And you reply with the hashtag Amazon cart.
Yeah, they add it to your.
They add it. So what they're basically done is doubled the tweet count for that item.
I don't need any help buying things. Let's put it that way.
But it's so easy. Nope.
I know. It's too easy.
You know, it seems to me.
You need things that are harder.
Why would you buy something based on somebody's tweet? I don't get that.
Because you're maybe an idiot. Yes, exactly.
I'm an idiot.
You know, I like to go to Amazon when I buy something and actually shop a little bit. You know, look at the alternative possibilities, look at the reviews.
I
always read the one-star reviews and see if the guy just doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, there's an interesting story about that.
Okay.
There is a guy who wrote a negative review of a router. Actually, this is kind of this raises some interesting issues. The router is from a company called MediaLink. MediaBridge Products took umbrage at the negative review.
They do that.
Threatened to sue the guy for libel.
Yeah.
Got him to change the review. Then Amazon weighed in and said, we are not selling MediaBridge products anymore.
Good for them. I hate these Good companies that do that. You used to be, that's very common. You run into some litigious company and they're so thin-skinned, they expect some joker write some negative review in a, you know, online forum like the Amazon reviews, and they get so thin-skinned they sue you. This is not a company that you want to do business with.
Well, okay.
It's not killing them. There's, I don't know that negative reviews have that much impact.
But here's the thing. Now I'm going to add the other side of this story.
Uh-oh.
What the MediaBridge company said is the review is libelous because he refers to two facts that are not true. One, he asserts that we are posting reviews, fallacious reviews of our own.
Which most companies do.
And two, that the MediaBridge router is a rebranded router from another company.
Which most routers are.
The MediaBridge folks said that is; those are both demonstrably not true.
So they actually hand-make this thing themselves, they not are, OEM'd at all.
They are, well, I don't know, but they are libelous.
Okay.
So they actually have a case for libel. And this is one thing that I thought was kind of interesting. If you're a reviewer, you might actually be libeling a company if you say something that is demonstrably untrue in the review.
I've always believed that, too.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, lawyers... when queried by Ars Technica about this, said, you know what? They actually have a case.
I'm surprised that more people don't get sued. Yelpers, for example, they come and they smear some operation because they, so, you know, didn't like the
let's give a little, and, you know, we're sitting here with the director of the Cronkite School of Journalism.
No, I'm not the director.
The guy who runs the whole place.
For the purposes of the show.
Inventor of journalism.
You're not the director, but
the man who invented journalism.
Yes. No.
Dan Gilmore, who is the director of the Knight Center for Digital Media Entrepreneurship at the Cronkite School. Tell me what libel is, because you must have been at some point, somebody at J School or somewhere told you, here's what you can and cannot do.
Well, there's a lot of nuances in libel. Basically, if you say something or publish something that is defamatory, that injures the reputation of someone else, and it's false, that can be
That's
libel.
The key, the false part. Because it has to be a fact.
There's malicious as part of this problem.
There's also intent.
You can be accidentally wrong. Right.
But if I call John, if I call you a schmuck, you can't sue me because that is
Well, it's like douchebag. They use the word douchebag.
That's an opinion.
Yeah.
But if I say, John, you're a pederast.
Or a crook.
If I said you're a crook, that's actually a good one.
I could sue you.
Because that sounds like, oh, you're a crook.
I always tell journalists, do not use the word crook because you're asking for trouble.
That's literally libelous or slanderous, depending on the
Or criminal. He's always a criminal. Is he a criminal, really?
And you know how I found this out? I was talking, I think it was about patent trolls, on Tech TV, and I called the guy an extortionist. And the lawyers, the NBC, or whoever the lawyers were.
Yeah, you can't do that.
They said, that's libelous. You take it back.
Yeah, you could call him a virtual extortionist if you had some example.
I could say it's extortion-like.
There's a lot of things you could say.
I could say it's tantamount to extortion, but I can't say extortion.
Right.
I remember Penn and Teller saying, fraud is bad. You should never say that because then you have to prove it.
Yep.
But, you know, douchebag or bullshit, those are fine.
Yep.
Those are just value judgments.
Yeah, and douchebag is a real funny one because if you actually sued over that, it'd be a great court case. Can you imagine?
I am not a douchebag. This is a douchebag. Here I am. Do I even look like a douchebag? I ask you. Well, you look a little like one, but I'm not one. No, you're not one, sir. You win. So anyway, I do like the fact that Amazon stepped up. On the other hand, in fact, they might have been kind of in the wrong because this company, MediaLink, the MediaBridge company, really maybe had grounds for sue.
Yeah, but, you know, still, you don't sue it at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And it's some poor guy.
Well, they didn't sue him, by the way. They threatened him.
Which is worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Streisand effect is in play at this point.
That's a good point.
That company,
yeah.
They have now shown themselves to be somebody or a company with a thin skin and with serious questions raised about the routers that they're selling. Whether,
right.
I don't know if it's true or false, but... It has made me, for two reasons, less likely to buy it because the first one is I don't like companies that sue people for things like this. And the other is I don't know much about the router.
Right. So that so that's good on Amazon. Here's one bad on Amazon. Hachette.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The big publishing house.
Big publishing
huge.
House. Yep. Among Hachette's authors, Malcolm Gladwell. If you go to Amazon.com and you search for The Tipping Point, lovely book, highly recommended by Malcolm Gladwell. You'll see Amazon says, oh, yeah, The Tipping Point. We'll get that to you in 2 to 3 weeks. Usually ships in 2 to 3 weeks.
I see that, yes.
Now, Hachette says, that's not true. They have pallets of that book.
What about Prime? It says Prime. It should be 2 days.
But they don't have Amazon's saying we don't have it in stock. And apparently they're doing this with a lot of Hachette books.
I'll tell you, the New York publishers, when you go back and have meetings with any of them, all they do is complain about Amazon pulling these stunts.
This is like net neutrality, but for books.
Yeah.
Like Amazon is basically controlling the pipeline for books.
Yeah. Books. Exactly.
And if Hachette doesn't
That's exactly
pay,
what it is.
Then they delay the shipment.
So what's the backstory? Why are they doing this?
Well, apparently there's a dispute with Hachette over pricing. You know, all the time Google. Amazon. So what happened when the Amazon first started out? The publishers loved them. Oh, my God, we have somebody we can go to that won't
Move
charge
books.
Us like
right.
Borders or Barnes & Noble. And then Amazon puts Barnes & Noble out of business, or Borders out of business, shrinks Barnes & Noble's presence significantly. And then Amazon goes to them and says, oh, by the way, we're going to take
this is what Tower Records
more,
did.
A
too,
little more money.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what's going on, but it seems...
I know. I can find out.
It seems likely that Hachette is... That Amazon wants a bigger discount from Hachette.
It could have to do with the e-books, because Amazon really only gets defensive when it comes to the e-books.
Yeah. But it's affecting a lot of authors, and the authors are pissed, because in some cases the discount has disappeared, so they're charging full freight. In many cases, it's just not available. And so it's costing. Who does it cost, really? Well, not just Hachette. It costs the authors.
2 to 3
lost
weeks
sales.
They ship.
2 to 3 weeks.
I don't know. And I should preface what I'm going to say by saying that I have owned a small amount of Amazon stock for a long time. There are other bookstores. And if Amazon is doing this, it is stupid and arrogant. And it's going to come back and bite them, because it's... Mm-hmm. They do have enough market power in books that they should not be pulling stunts like that, assuming that that's what they're doing, which seems pretty likely. At this
yes,
point.
It
so
sure
really,
does.
Really dumb on their part.
You got to think that this is the kind of thing that the FTC would get involved in.
FTC's got FTC written all over
written
it.
Written all over it. Amazon has also, and this is a little weird, patented the white seamless background.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic. Oh. Yeah, this has got everybody up in arms.
It's ridiculous.
Amazon got it. First of all, I don't know whether to blame Amazon. I think I blame the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Yeah. Amazon has patented the idea of taking a picture of a product against a seamless white background.
Because that's never been done before.
Amazon's filing said, in the past, you've had to use green screen or post-processing or image retouching or other special effects to achieve the result of an object set against a true white background. Yeah. Thanks to our amazing invention, you can now take pictures of an object against a white background that don't need retouching.
Whoever approved this at the patent office should be fired.
Right. Should be fired.
Whoever submitted it from Amazon, whoever the lawyer was, should be disbarred. This is bullish.
It's stunning.
It mainly shows the complete and utter incompetence of the U.S. patent office, which routinely gives out ridiculous patents, and that's why we have this ridiculous and terrible patent situation.
You want to read it? It's patent 8,676,045. They got the patent on March 18th, and if you look at the diagram, the diagram's
like stick figures. It's not even an interesting diagram. They didn't even pay $5 to some artist to do it right.
Yeah, a piece of curved paper and some lights, and you too can take perfect pictures against a white background.
You sure this wasn't published on April 1st?
That's what I thought. First thing I thought when I saw it.
Because look at it. Look at that picture. That a child.
I know it's ludicrous.
That children do better than that. That's really
makes
amazing.
Makes no sense.
Look at the man. Look at the person.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
He's literally a stick figure.
Yeah, it's great.
What is this, a telephone? I think they patented the telephone.
I think they're just trying to make mockery of the whole thing.
That's it.
Well, you know what, you know what happens at companies like Amazon and Apple and Google? They have on staff, they're not even on retainer, on staff attorneys, often their own building, full of them.
Yeah.
And their only job is to go around, and the story is told in Fred Vogelstein's excellent book, Dogfight. Apple attorneys going around saying, what did you invent today?
Yeah. No, I know.
And
hey, Bill, you had any good ideas? We can patent that.
That's patentable. What else? Oh, that's patentable.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't blame the companies because this is such a broken system. Well, they should patent everything.
Yep.
Why not? I wish I'd patented podcasting when I invented it. But so
you still can. There's
not
time.
Not too late. I could reinvent it.
Yeah.
I'll approve any new invention. Just submit it. Don't look for prior art. That's the problem.
No. Why should you? Yeah. I have to think that some of this, it seems to be that the, and maybe this is the law, I don't know, that the point is kind of give most patents, approve most patents, and let them fight it out in court. Because we don't have the manpower.
No, that's what they always say. We haven't got the manpower. The second thing is more important. They should look at something like that. If you don't have the manpower, just take a quick look and say, this is out. If you haven't got manpower, you don't spend time approving this crap.
Well, the number one, one of the main features you're supposed to look at is novelty. Is this something new?
Right.
Presumably, this would fail right away.
Yes, child could figure out it would.
We've been doing this.
So, get this. This is a graph from Tim Lee. Patent approval rates. If the patent office says we approve 54% of all patents, but that's a little funny number because what they're saying is, of the patents that come in the door, 54% get approved immediately. But it turns out what mostly happens is patents that are turned down, the guy goes back, rewrites a few words,
brings it in again.
Right. Of all patent filings, 94% are approved.
That's nice.
94%. Wow. Now, here's a graph. It's kind of hard to see. I'll zoom in a little bit on this. Patent office allowance rates. The patent office uses the lower line, but the top line is the line. If we just look at all patents that come in the door, whether they ever get patented, we start in 1996, got almost 100% in 2001, and then went dipped a little bit. But under President Obama's patent commissioner, who happens to be a former Googler, by the way, it's skyrocketing. It's now currently 94%.
Well, I'll start with that guy Clinton put in. I actually was at a thing at the Commonwealth Club, where it was the patent guy that was with Clinton and some, I think it was maybe Lessig or somebody, saying this is bogus. And I asked them an interesting question. It was because they had all these business practice patents now legal.
Right.
And I said, is it possible to patent a football play?
Oh.
And he said, he says, the problem is there has to be some technology aspect to it or you can't patent it. I said, what if it's a timing play? He says, yeah, you could patent that.
I'm sorry, he's not a Googler, he's an IBMer.
Oh, well, the IBM, the number one patent machine.
They have a few.
They're the worst.
Dave Kapos.
They crank out everything.
He was former Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and the Director of USPTO till 2013. So the new one.
Didn't IBM invent patent trolling? I mean, pretty much.
I think you're right. Now, currently, the current Director of USPTO is Teresa Stanek Rhea. She's interim. She's a pharmacist.
Yeah.
Worked for drug
patents.
Who else does a lot of patents? Big Pharma.
Big Pharma?
Big Pharma.
They're patenting genes.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. She resigned in November.
Who is it now?
What? Okay, any guesses on who this person will have worked for? Peggy Focorino. She doesn't even. She is
not even a wiki.
Not
person.
Even in Wikipedia. She began performing the functions and duties of the commissioner for patents, but we don't know who she is. I'm guessing. I bet you she worked for somebody that does.
It's
a
big Pharma's the one really dominating.
Big Pharma's the one. Yeah.
That's why they. In fact, if I was Big Pharma, trying to patent all this crazy stuff, I'd put some of these goofball patents through, like the one about the white background, just to distract from the really nasty patents going through drugs.
Yeah. Hey, we'll talk about Snapchat and wrap this up in a second. But
Snapchat.
I know you love Snapchat for sending sexy pictures.
I've never used Snapchat, actually.
Really?
And I've always thought it was a honeypot.
Well, maybe it is. The FTC thinks it is.
Somebody thinks it
is. Our show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite's backing up those files to the cloud automatically, continuously. Accessing your files anytime is easy with their free Carbonite app, or you just log on to any computer and with your Carbonite account, and there's your stuff. You can email it to somebody. You can see if it's really been backed up. You can see if it's there. It gives you peace of mind protection. And should the worst happen, you're going to get that file back. 350 million files a day are backed up at Carbonite.com. I think the total is over 30 billion files backed up. I'm sorry, 300 billion files backed up total. It's just amazing. The Carbonite for Business, such a great solution because it's automatic. It's continuous to the cloud. Carbonite for Home starts at $59.99 a year for everything on your Mac or your PC. That's less than $5 a month for real peace of mind. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. You just need the offer code TWIT. You get 2 weeks free and 2 months free when you purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right
with Carbonite.
So Snapchat, we knew this. Snapchat, it turns out, that's the company that teens love because they can take a picture and messages.
They can text provide each other phone. Child pornography.
I don't think they do that.
Oh,
I think that's what adults think they would do if they were teenagers.
Because that's what we would do, yeah.
That's what we would have done. But in fact,
there's a lot of sexting, let's put it.
Is it really? Come on, is it?
The place is loaded with. That's where you would go to do this.
Yeah, I think that's what you think.
Everybody, well, fine. Or maybe I'm wrong, but everybody out there who used the system to send a couple of racy pictures, you can be good.
Well, we all thought they disappeared. You could set when you sent the picture, you could say I want it to be visible for 10 to 30 seconds, and then after that it disappears. My kids use it a lot, and I think we talked to Dana Boyd on Triangulation a couple of weeks ago. She said she's the wonderful researcher the Harvard researcher who really kind of keeps up on what kids today are doing and thinking. And
These kids.
No, she's good because she said, what they really, it's for them, it's they understand privacy, the implications, and they just want to, they want ephemera. They want, mm-hmm. They don't like the fact that everything they do is preserved forever on the internet.
Ephemera.
They want to be able to send an ephemeral picture once in a while.
Okay.
I think reasonable.
Yeah, yeah, I've actually talked to my daughter and some of her friends about it. They're teenagers, and it's not so much that the pictures are dirty, or it's that they don't have to care about them as much. So if you take a picture and you put it on Instagram or Facebook, people are going to see it forever, and so then you have to agonize about whether it's any good or not. If you just want to take a stupid picture of yourself sticking your tongue out or making a stupid face, you don't have to worry about everybody seeing it, because only the person you send it to is going to see it, and they're only going to see it for 10 seconds.
I have to think, and my kids say exactly the same thing, and everybody, and this isn't about sexting, but I have to think there must be a kind of a little bit of a subtle pressure on people who use Facebook and Instagram and Twitter that this is going to live forever. They just this little niggling feeling of gosh,
it's the social pressure. In fact, I was at a party yesterday and there was a young kid who was I think 14 and he was talking about Instagram and how this picture got this many likes and this picture got that many likes, and there's a huge amount of social pressure to just, well, why didn't my picture get any likes? But Snapchat, you don't have to worry about any of that. It's literally just there and gone.
Well, clearly somebody likes it because it's huge.
Yes.
Facebook,
they're not so gone.
Yeah, but and, those pictures
and corrupt apparently.
So well, let's talk about this. But first, Facebook tried to buy. No, Google tried to buy them, or Facebook. Somebody for $3 billion. Snapchat said we're worth more than that, and they probably would have been except for this. Maybe they wish they'd taken the money now.
I think that would be what I would think.
Facebook tried to compete with Poke. Mark Zuckerberg said, "I wrote this myself." Actually, this week, Facebook announced that they're killing both Poke and Facebook Camera. Two apps that they developed that nobody adopted, but Snapchat lived on. Well, a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission, Snapchat, The FTC said Snapchat was deceiving customers because, well, see, this I think is BS, because there are ways to save the message. For instance, opening it in a third-party app or doing a screenshot, I think everybody understands
Yeah, for sure.
And you can't fight that. I mean, you could always put the Snapchat picture up there and take a picture with a camera. But also, there's some issue about whether Snapchat may not actually be getting rid of that image on the server.
Well, they keep keeping something because apparently a bunch of phone numbers were, like, ripped off by some hackers.
To me, it's not just the images. They kept your location in some cases.
Yeah.
They kept, you know, contact information and other sort of personal information. Like the images, I think we all knew, they're on your phone. Someone can get them if they want to.
Well, the FTC complaint did point out that for a year, the FAQ at Snapchat's website read like this: is there any way to view an image after the time has expired? Snapchat's answer: no, snaps disappear after the timer runs out. I think it's reasonable for the FTC to say, well, a consumer might read that and think foolishly those pictures have disappeared.
The third parties were getting access to the phone numbers of other people.
Right.
That was the real problem, I think.
That happened with WhatsApp as well, by the way. There was an Android malware apps on Android that were sending, you know, bogus paid texts, remember?
Yeah.
And the way they got the phone number was they just checked with WhatsApp. And they said, hey, what's the phone number? And WhatsApp said, oh, I'll tell you. So this is an issue all around. FTC's complaint also said there were several security failures at Snapchat, a data breach in December in which 4.6 million Snapchat accounts and cell numbers were leaked onto the internet. But did anybody assert that Snapchat could save those images on the Snapchat servers? Because I read that as well.
Yeah, I did too. Why not?
They have to go through the servers.
It's not clear that they did.
Right.
No, but why wouldn't they?
But well, they did keep location information and contact info.
Right.
I have a rule of thumb about information that goes online. If it's something I'm really going to want to have later, I need to back it up myself. If it's something that might embarrass me someday, I don't need to take any action. It will live forever without any intervention.
That's the case. That's for sure. Information Week lists five ways Snapchat violated your privacy security. Recipients may have saved your image, right? Recipients may have saved your videos, right? Snapchat may have transmitted your location, or Snapchat may have collected contact information from your address book, and the Find Friends feature was not secure.
I thought it was interesting there was no financial penalty.
They just, you know, but this is a penalty, though. For 20 years... Like Snapchat's going to be around 20
years.
Does
anybody think Snapchat's around?
Yeah, really.
Really?
The FTC has mandated a monitor. They're going to have to wear a bracelet.
Around their ankle, yeah.
20 years.
It won't be 20. Wait till, you're right, they'll be out of business, or the next Republican president will just drop it.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Microsoft,
a Republican hater.
Same thing happened to Microsoft. In that Department of Justice case, and that was one of the penalties Microsoft had to have a monitor. And I think that person's not doing much.
That's a good job.
Got to be a good job. You got to have an office in Redmond. You're just sitting there going.
That ended.
Go to Burger Master.
It did end. Okay.
Yeah.
What did the monitor do?
Nothing.
Okay.
What would you do?
You send a report.
Hey, Bill. Haven't talked in a while. Anything you want me to know?
No.
Okay, thanks.
Like parole officer, you drop by, you say
drop
hi.
By. Yeah.
Check and see if there's anybody buried in the backyard.
What's in that backyard? There's a lump there with fresh dirt. Is that anything
It's a flower bed.
Okay, thanks. See ya. Let's have lunch. What do you say someday?
Burger Master.
Okay. Target CEO out of a job. See, there's repercussions.
I'm surprised that these guys lasted that long.
I know.
That was a huge screw-up. I think it's hurt the company to this day. I actually still, when I go to Target, I have a Target nearby, and I pay cash. I actually, last time I was there, I was pulling out my credit card, and it says, I'll pay cash.
Yeah, because I don't know if I trust you still.
That may be the first time there's been actual consequences for a company doing a big data breach. I mean,
that's the first one I remember.
There's no consequence at all. I think that's great that they fired him, and that's great that they're losing business. That's what needs to happen.
Is that are they losing business? Wow.
I think they lost a lot of business.
Wow.
They're just coming back, and I go still go there by pay cash.
So just a little tip to CEOs of major companies, whenever there's a security breach, you do not tell anyone.
Which is the old rule. That's old school, Leo.
Well, look what happened. He told people, and boom, he's out of work.
Old school. That's what the banks always
keep
do.
Keep it a secret.
Yep.
No one needs to know.
Nothing happened.
Pay no attention.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, congratulations to Brewster Kahle and the Internet Archive. You know, the Wayback Machine, which has been indexing the Internet since 2001. Can you imagine?
I thought it goes before that.
That's when the Wayback Machine launched. In 2006, Archive It launched, allowing libraries to create curated collections of web content. In other words, enlisting libraries to help them. They built a new data center in 2009, a 3-petabyte data center. In 2011, the HTTP archive became part of the Internet Archive. I don't know what that is. I'm just reading crap here.
I don't know what that is either. I didn't know about
No idea what that means. How about this? How about this? This is the landmark. 400 billion indexed web pages. Mm-hmm. 400 billion, that encompasses the web as it looked any time from the late 1996 up to a few hours ago. That is a major milestone, 400 billion web pages.
You know what I didn't know? I went looking for the first Twitter's first homepage because I wanted a screenshot to use in a blog post. And I searched for it, and the Wayback Machine said Twitter has blocked us from, or that website is not available.
That's
really so they send all the content to the Library of Congress with a huge pipe, and they also sell the pipe to anybody who has enough money. You can get the pipe and get all the Twitter stuff, but they won't let the archive.org just put a simple screenshot up.
Yeah, wow. I thought that was weird.
That's douchebags.
Owie, owie. Well, here is from this is I don't see a lot of CSS, but this is Twitter from 2006. When it was TWTTR. Use TWTTR to stay in touch with your friends all the time. If you have a cell phone and text messages, you'll never be bored again, ever.
I use it. I still get bored.
Here's a public timeline of actual real-life people doing stuff. Rich tweets, Mars, the red planet, is about to be spectacular. And then he tweets, and the installation is free. And then apparently Rich is the only guy using Twitter. Rich tweets, watching a special on Andre the Giant. And then Ray Reddy Ray tweets, had a good conversation with my mom. This is Twitter as
it
was.
Yeah, that's actually not much different.
And here's where you put in your mobile number and everything. So there is some early stuff. And it also says at the top, try out other stuff Odeo makes. Because this Twitter thing, we don't know if it's going to survive. The Wayback Machine is at Internet Archive. I'm sorry, archive.org is the Internet Archive.
Right.
And you can enter in URLs. And the earliest is August 2nd, 2006.
For Twitter.
Huh. That's kind of cool. So there is some old stuff, Matthew.
Screenshots.
I was looking for the image that was used, like the logo and stuff like that was used on the page.
Here's a good one. This is the first fail whale from September 2006. Got an HTTP 302 response at crawl time. Oh, no, that's because it changed to Twitter.com. That was when it changed from TWITT.
That was your opportunity, your right missed there. Opportunity right there, yeah.
To jump on the Twitter bandwagon.
No, to sue them. Oh. Could have done that. Would have been fun.
Here's another early tweet.
This is what it's come to, ladies and gentlemen listening. Old tweets. Not even new tweets.
Really, really old tweets.
Old tweets.
From 2006.
The old tweet show.
That's well, at least idea. You found the founder.
That's another possibility for
the
your network.
The old tweet show.
The old tweet show with a couple old farts.
And then,
Biz
tweeted, "Alrighty, I'm heading home now." Yeah.
Fascinating.
My tweeted, this really is the first day of the rest of my life.
Ah, it's just, you can't you get, can't make, doesn't get better
can't
than
make
that.
Up stuff this good.
I'm going to take a nap.
I do think that someday the future of Twit is me and John sitting on a porch playing checkers.
Could be. Chinese checkers, to be exact.
Let's take a break. When we come back, a final word. We'll say goodnight to all our friends and family and a happy Mother's Day. Anybody wants to say happy Mother's Day, their mom will give you a chance to do that in a second. First, let's ask Mike Elgin what's coming up in the week ahead, Mike.
In the week ahead, Motorola is making a big announcement in London on Tuesday, May 13th. We're expecting the company to launch an updated version of the Moto X phone, plus a new low-cost phone called the Moto E. And the Federal Communications Commission is scheduled to vote on Thursday, May 15th, on proposed rules that would end net neutrality in the United States. That's what's coming up in the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Mike Elgin, TNT, every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC, your daily dose of tech news. And, of course, we now have an evening show, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC, TN2 Tech News Tonight with Sarah Lane. So we got your tech news covered. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle.com, the fastest, simple way to sell those old gadgets. John, I gave you my old HTC One. I know you would like the new HTC One M8.
Can I sell the old one?
Sell the old one.
Huh.
You know what? We should check. Let's see what it's worth. One of the nice things about Gazelle, we've got some gadgets, new gadget announcements coming up. You heard Motorola. Maybe you want to check out what your Moto X is worth now. The nice thing about Gazelle.com is the quote you get today is good for 30 days. So if, for instance, Motorola comes out with a new Moto X, and, of course, when it does, you know the price is going to go down on the old one.
Uh-huh.
You've got that quote. You've got it locked in for $115.
For the
old Moto X.
Oh,
that's a good deal.
What's about my HTC?
HTC? All right. Let's go here. We have HTC One. They, you know, the iPads, iPhones. Yours is unlocked, which makes it extra.
No, it's not.
Oh, that was the one that I gave you that was locked. I'm sorry. Never mind.
It's good for playing Angry Birds.
Is that what you're doing with that?
No, I use it for miscellaneous things. You can still Wi-Fi with it. Skype with it.
There it is. Here it is. The one 32 gig good condition. $145. It's like I gave you cash.
It is.
It's like I gave you actual money.
I'm going to lock this deal in before
I've been a few
HTC
of you have
3
stuff.
Comes
yeah,
out.
Exactly. Anyway, Gazelle.com, they will buy your old gadgets. They will give you cash. Actually, it's kind of nice. So get the 30-day quote, and you don't have to pull the trigger until that new thing comes out. Or, you have time to decide, time to buy it, time to move the data over. Then check out. They'll send you a box. They pay for the postage on anything worth more than a buck. And, yes, they buy broken iPhones, broken iPads. And, yes, those are worth more than a buck. They ship it to them. If you don't remove the data, they'll do that for you. And then they'll send you a check, a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card that's worth 5% more because they just like you so much. So if you are a Gazelle, an Amazon user, Gazelle is a great choice for you. Visit Gazelle.com. Join the, what is it? It's how many hundreds of millions? I think it's 700,000 customers who have been paid more than $100 million by Gazelle.com. The easiest way to move those old gadgets out of your life. Move some cash into your pocket. Gazelle.com. I really like this M8.
Yeah, I know you do.
I think that's the phone
you
to
liked
get.
The other one, too.
I did, but I think this is even better. But I'm curious to see what Motorola's going to announce.
You keep going from phone to phone to phone to phone.
It's my job. I'm a
and
little
like
frog
them all.
Hopping
Have
from
you
little...
not liked a phone?
Many. I don't like the Samsungs anymore. I think Samsungs are crapped up.
That's funny. A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, well, I'm not alone.
All right. Well, that killed the show. I think we're done.
King me.
I think we're done.
King me, John.
Here you go.
Somebody wanted me to. The chat room's been wanting me to show this picture from Autotopia. Solar panels. That.
I mean, I'm telling you, this thing does this.
That you can use as parking tile, as tiles in your driveway or parking lot.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah.
They're so tough you can drive on them. It's actually an Indiegogo. Did you
good
see?
Idea.
And it actually, if you didn't see, we're going to launch it right after this show, I think, right? We did it in beta. I want you to be on it, John.
Okay.
In fact, you
I'm on. I'm in.
You two, Dan and Matthew, it's called I'd Fund That. And the idea is people have Kickstarters or Indiegogos. We'll line up three or four of them. They'll come in, they'll pitch us, we'll sit here, the judges, and we'll ask them questions, and we'll decide whether we'd fund it or not.
Hold the numbers up.
Oh, yeah, well, just yes or no, thumbs up, thumbs down.
So this is a Shark Tank.
It's like Shark Tank, but for crowdsourcing.
You've cloned Shark Tank for crowsourcing.
Mark Cuban.
Yeah, Shark Tank was a clone of Dragon's Den.
It was, you're right.
Yeah.
Which was a clone of something else.
Probably was. So, but the fun thing is it's for crowdsourced stuff. We get to see a lot of new projects. We did the first one yesterday. It was so much fun. We're going to replay that after this show. So stay tuned. But I think it's a fun idea. And you'd be a great judge because you're so skeptical.
No, I'm a good guy.
I think you would just hate everything.
I would like everything.
I don't think so.
Unless it involved drawing in a YouTube
video. Oh, sure. Drawing.
Matthew Ingram, GigaOhm.com. He's back from Perugia. He's probably wants to go back to Etruscany.
Sure do.
It's not Etruscany. It's
Etruscany.
Etrusca. What is it?
I'm thinking of Tuscany.
It's the the old capital
Umbria.
Of the Etruscans.
Umbria.
Umbria. Yeah. anything you want to plug? Anything at all?
I got nothing.
Are you wearing Vibram Five Fingers shoes right now?
I am not.
Doesn't he look like somebody who might be?
No, not to me. He looks Canadian.
I thought about it, but I...
Well, he's
I
thought about it. Well, that's
actually,
not good.
Actually, they lost in court, and they have to... they're going to pay people back.
Why?
Yeah.
For six,
because they made claims that weren't true.
Yeah. Oh.
They're not that good for you, actually, to run in.
Yeah. But then James Fallows wrote a spirited defense... of the you know what?
So Fallows wears them, is
James
what he said.
James Fallows wears them. So
that
he said they were great for me. I'm not going to ask for my money back. Mm-hmm. But they claimed health benefits that really don't. But the funny thing is, I don't think anybody cares one way or another about that. It's like the reaction to Crocs. They're so horrendously awful looking.
Yeah.
that people just hate them.
Yeah.
And they just are so happy that they lost that case. It's so weird. So what? If you want to wear shoes with toes, who cares?
I can't believe anyone would wear those.
I know. Let's look at our audience because we frequently have people wearing them. Anybody? No. All right. We've got a good crowd today. Thank you.
So somebody wearing those plus Google Glass.
There you go. There's your stereotype. Oh, Silicon Valley written all over.
And then they hop on their Segway at the end of the show and they go home.
Yeah, and run into a wall.
No, they get on a Google bus.
Yes. Have you guys been watching Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
It's, you know, the problem with Silicon Valley, I've said it before, is that it's hard to ridicule a clown. And Silicon Valley itself is so idiotic with some of the stuff you can get off the YouTube of people giving lectures and speeches, like that character from AOL has got the long hair and a British accent. And he's
Shingy.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, Shingy. You can't
make fun of him. You can't make that guy up.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte.
Hurts the show.
What? Hello? You woke me up there, Chad. You know, the guy who plays Peter Gregory, who is a thinly veiled parody of Peter Thiel.
Yes, I know. That's a good character.
Christopher Evan Welch. He passed away, and I don't think he'll be in this week's episode.
I didn't know he passed away.
His last episode was, I think, last week. He did five episodes. Yeah, 47 years old. Died of lung cancer. That's sad. He knew he was dying. I'll be blunt. When he took the job, when he auditioned for it, I wonder what they're going to do with it this week. But it's a sad thing because he is the highlight of the show. His kind of borderline autistic.
Yeah, he's great.
Venture capitalist. It's like you can't take your eyes off him.
They just have to kill him in the show and bring somebody else. That's worse.
Yeah. He had that really thin car.
Yeah, I love that thin car. Oh, billionaires.
And he couldn't look anybody in the eye.
No.
He couldn't look anybody in the eye. John C. Dvorak, channel, Dvorak.com, but most importantly, NoAgendaShow.com. How is Adam doing these days?
No Agenda. He's going to Japan.
Yeah.
And we're doing the show. Now we're going to do a show from Tokyo.
Oh, that's cool.
It's going to be kind of interesting.
Is he moving to Japan?
No.
He seems to be in like some sort of fugitive thing going on.
I think they're after him.
He changes countries a little too frequently.
Well, he's just going there for a week.
Oh, okay. He's not moving to
Japan. But NoAgendaShow.com. We've got some good stuff. People should check it out if they haven't already.
What's the best thing? Just go to that website.
NoAgendaShow.com is probably the best place to start.
Or if you're in Silicon Valley, look at a news, you know, any newsstand or... place where they hand out free newspapers. John goes around leaving CDs of the show.
Yeah. It's marketing. Cheap marketing.
It's brilliant. Hey, it's so great to see you again, Dan. Thank you for the work you do at The Guardian. I think you're really the voice of reason there. And it must be fun working at the Cronkite School. That's great.
It's fun and great students. And the future is there. They're going to do stuff that we never thought of.
Well, you focus on digital.
I do.
Which is probably wise in this day. You don't want to be the guy who's saying, you know, newsprint, that's the future.
There are guys that still teach that old stuff. Yeah.
Do you teach a different kind of journalism because it's digital?
Journalism is journalism. I'm working on things like media literacy and entrepreneurship, things like that.
Yeah, now I tell you what, if I were a young person, I would start my own business. This is a great time to be an entrepreneur, to be. And if the government doesn't screw it up, maybe it will continue to be so. Thank you, Dan. It's great to see you again. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everybody for joining us. We do TWIT every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. It's great if you watch live. We love our chat room. We love the interaction we get from the chat room.
And, it's fantastic.
If you want to be live in studio, we always have a nice bunch of people in here. They most of the time are wearing regular shoes.
Yeah.
Occasionally wear glass. But you could do that by emailing tickets at twit.tv. We welcome you here. It's always great to see. We got from Australia, from all over the world. Ohio. I don't know if that's Ohio. I can't remember. Minnesota, right? Minneapolis.
As we would call it, Minnesota nuts.
They're Minnesota nuts?
No, it's just a...
Who's we?
It's an EITM thing. Never mind.
Anyway, tickets at twit.tv. And, of course, you can always get the show after the fact. On-demand audio and video available at twit.tv, but also everywhere. You can get shows like this, of this sort, Stitcher, iTunes. The other day I saw it on TiVo. You can TiVo it as well.
Roku box you're
Roku,
on.
Roku. We got our own Roku. Actually, the apps are a great way to watch. We have a great group of developers. On Android, iOS,
I was watching
even
on the
Windows Phone,
the Roku box the other day, and it's nice and clear.
Isn't it great?
That's why I complained about these mics.
Because you suddenly saw us as a television show.
Yeah, and you need lavaliers as opposed to...
You know, I like the look. It's a little retro. I just like the idea of a big, fat mic.
Well, at least
mic.
You're not wearing the cans.
Big mic. In the morning, John.
In the morning.
In the morning. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next week. Another TWIT is in the can. Thank you, everybody. They tell me if I do this... People will applaud.
Will they?